little checklist out on the website for you to refer to.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by John Nicholson, a retired Racine Unified Administrator, Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the Teacher Education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconser, an Associate Professor of Education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current Special Education Support Volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the Special Education Department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning. I'm Dwayne Olson, your host today for Education Matters on WGTD-HD, Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin, at 91.1 on your FM dial, and 101.7 in Elkhorn, and 103.3 in Lake Geneva. WGTD is a member of the Wisconsin Public Radio Network. Our program today focuses on financial issues facing the Racine Unified School District, including the outcomes of the November 4, 2014 referendum in the Racine Unified District. This referendum provides the district with $8.5 million per year for the next 15 years for several purposes. To help understand what is happening as a result of these additional funds, our guest today is David Hazen, Chief Operations Officer for the district. Welcome, David, to today's edition of Education Matters. It's good to have you aboard.
Thank you, Dwayne.
You're most welcome. According to Unified's website, as Chief Operations Officer, you are responsible for four areas: facilities, maintenance, infrastructure, and payroll. I suspect with all of these responsibilities, there is never a dull moment.
It keeps me busy.
There you go. And thank you for helping us to understand the financial developments that are taking place in the district, including the results of this referendum. So to get us started, introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell them about your professional background with the Racine Unified School District. And I first knew you as a member of the Racine Unified School Board beginning in, what, 1994?
Yes, that's about right. I was a school board member for 9 years, from 94 to 2002 or 3.
Oh, my goodness.
And then I was away from the district for a while. And I came back in 2007 as the chief financial officer. And
okay.
Have had that role, which changed to the chief operating officer. I've had that role ever since.
So you went from financial officer to a broader
yes
range
and no.
of responsibility.
I mean, it's more of a name change than anything else.
Oh, okay. Well, it's good to have you aboard. Today we want to focus on the outcomes that our community can expect from the funds provided by the November 2014 referendum. So let's first talk about the two committees that were formed to facilitate carrying out the referendum's goals, and that includes citizens from the community.
Okay. There are two committees. It was actually part of the referendum process. When the district was out speaking to the community about and giving them information on the referendum, there were two committees that were proposed. One is a facilities advisory committee, and the second is a technology advisory committee. Two of the big pushes for the referendum was to improve the technology in our public schools in Racine, as well as to improve our facilities in our public schools in Racine.
Okay, so let's move on to the Technology Advisory Council, because they've really gotten underway. Tell our listeners what has already happened in terms of the Chromebooks that have been purchased by the district for use by our students.
The proposal that went forward to the school board was to provide over 5,000 Chromebooks to district students. The purpose of that is really to provide a portal to the web.
Okay.
There's so many educational opportunities out on the Internet, and the district has had computers and has computers, but with today's technology, fortunately, the price has come down for things such as Chromebooks, and in order to get a better ratio of computers, or as one gentleman from the community called it on the committee, an appliance. And I never thought of it that way, but it does make sense. It's an appliance that helps you get onto the internet. To increase the ratio of how many appliances or computers we have available per student, and then start using those in part of the instructional process.
So what they are then is a tool that provides access to information that's used in terms of kids' learning.
Exactly right. And it's amazing. A small pilot was done at the Racine Civil Leaders Academy, a new charter school that the district has, where they actually went one-to-one Chromebooks for every student in the school. And you bring them in, you put them in front of the kids, and you give them two or three instructions, and they're off and running. The students today are very technology literate.
Yes.
And it doesn't take them long to start utilizing them.
And that makes another good point, too, that technology literate, because they have to be technology literate in the world that they're going to be living in.
That's very true. That's very true.
All of their lives. And so they're getting a start with the technology that we have now, and that's really wonderful. And I've thought a lot about it. I was a high school American history teacher, and teaching history has to be so different today because of all of the resources teachers have access to.
It is, and I'm not a history teacher, but I know that you can get onto the web and you can almost virtually visit history in some instances. So it's a whole new way, and someone like myself, a very visual learner, I wish I had had that back in the day rather than having to read the book. But I do enjoy reading as well.
Okay, and maybe I should get a punch in here for curriculum development too, because then I think it makes it even more important to take time to develop curriculum, because there's so much information you have access to. What's really important for kids to know?
And that's really one of the challenges for, I think, all school districts, and certainly Racine Unified is addressing that challenge, is how do you integrate the technology, the use of technology, to bring in a wider breadth of learning experiences.
Right. And as, again, I was saying, it makes the idea of curriculum development even more important, because they're just simply a plethora of resources that back in my day we had the textbook and then you had the library and so on and so forth. But
yes, that's true. And also the way the computers can be used to help students help themselves and help each other. Many times when you're giving instruction, it's you're more of a facilitator for the students.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, so what are some future aspects of technology that Unified is contemplating? Where do you see this going then?
One of the other big areas is technology for career and technical education.
Right.
When we were again talking about the referendum, our schools, our high schools, are being transformed, and they're going to be based on career pathways.
Okay.
And I'll give one example. If we have a manufacturing career pathway, we need to have current equipment that the students can learn on and work with and touch, and that's also part of what we call technology. One of the other pathways the district is going to put into play is culinary arts.
Wonderful.
And so what do they need? We have stoves in our district that still have the old burners and dials, and they're not. So we need to bring things up to current standards, so our students will be working on what they will see if they do choose that as a career path.
Because they have so much technology in them today that they didn't have 30 years ago when these were purchased.
Right,
probably.
Right, that's right, that's right. So that's going to be a big push as that move gets going, and identifying what are the needs in terms of equipment / technology for the various career paths.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, the career kind of thing that the district is planning to do. I was talking with Dr. Hawes the other day, and she was telling me about that. And I'm sure we'll have a program dealing with that as we move into the future.
Yeah, that would be, and also I would suggest Eric Gallion, the chief of schools. He's the spearhead or force for that movement.
That movement. Yeah, okay, right. Good. Well, good. Thanks for the idea for a future program. Let's talk about the Facilities Advisory Council and tell our listeners what's happening in terms of major maintenance, safety, et cetera, in summer of 2015 to get us started here.
The other major committee that was created is Facility Advisory Committee, which touches on the other portion of how referendum funds will be used. That group has actually broken into four separate committees.
Okay.
There are three schools being two new schools and one addition being contemplated by the board. So a committee was formed for each one of those.
Okay.
And then the fourth committee deals with the deferred maintenance. And I'll start with that one since you asked about summer projects.
Okay.
With the funds that we have now, summer is obviously the best time to do work on our schools. The students are not necessarily present, and we can get things done without disturbing the academic environment. This first year, we were kind of on a fast pace in order to get things in the hopper for this coming summer. The largest project being considered is a redo of the Case field house.
Okay.
I'm a graduate of Case, and one way back in the 70s when I graduated, it was fairly new, and things really haven't changed, and it's in a little bit of disrepair. So that's one of the larger projects. Other projects are, they're large, but they're more the mundane things. They're roofs and parking lots, things like that that need to be done and replaced. They're all part of the list that the board has been working with that lists all of our deferred maintenance. And some of the other projects are one of in addition to facilities, a piece of the facilities was about safety and security. And we're going to be going through our schools and creating more safe environments in the sense of putting in vestibules for entryways where we can and where it makes sense. And there's a few of those projects scheduled this summer as well, where they'll take and rearrange how people enter the building so there can be a stopping point as visitors come in. And they're identified, and then they can go on into the school.
And at least this last part you were talking about is for safety in terms of operating the schools so that people aren't entering that who shouldn't be there.
That's true, and it's unfortunate, but that's the world we live in today. So
exactly.
We're addressing that.
And the buildings that we have, though, or so many of them, are buildings from another era.
Right. I mean, our oldest building was built before Lincoln was president, and I know people have heard that before, but it's true.
And it's still being used.
Yes, it is.
Okay. So then that takes care of then facilities for this coming summer. Does Unified's website indicate what's happening, when and where in terms of these major maintenance and safety and that sort of thing, so curious people can keep track?
Yes. If you go to the district's website, I believe there's a page that talks about referendum, and it's updated every time there's a board meeting and a decision is made on what next steps would be occurring in terms of referendum funding. And as we get going, what I would like to do is start putting pictures of the
Wonderful.
Before and after. We aren't there yet because we haven't done much, but as we ramp up this summer and with the board's approval, if they approve the building of schools, we'll be showing that as well.
Okay, and I want to compliment you then in terms of whoever did the website in preparation for the referendum. The pictures that were on that website, I think, really probably convinced many people that this referendum really was needed in terms of safety and everything else.
And that's true. I mean, it's very old saying, a picture is worth 1,000 words, and with today's technology, it's much easier to get pictures to more people, and the website was one way to do that.
Yeah, and one of the things I've often thought about, and I'm not a native of Racine, but I think that, you know, that people drive by schools and they look at Frat Elementary School. Well, it looks like the frat that they were in, you know, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, and so forth. And so they assume things are the same, but they're not.
Yeah, that's interesting. Knapp School, which is one of the schools that we're going to be asking the board to consider rebuilding, one of the members of that committee went to kindergarten there, and he is, I don't know exactly how old he is, but he's at least in his 60s, maybe 70s.
Oh, yes.
So, we have alumni that go way back to many of our schools.
Oh, exactly. and we go by, and we think that they're operating the same as they did when we were there, and they're not.
And in today's world, they shouldn't be, because what education has changed, what children learn. I mean, obviously, reading, writing, and arithmetic are still there, but the technology, the creative thinking, it's much different.
Right, and the resources that we just talked about that they have today for teaching just weren't there.
Right, and if we need to utilize those. If we don't, we'll fall behind.
Right. Not only will we fall by, our students will fall by, and they won't be ready for the world they're going to live in.
Correct. Right.
So on. So okay, let's talk about facilities a little bit more here. So the two new buildings, and by the way, you indicated to me that the other day that the board has not yet approved these new buildings. Do you have any sense for when this is going to happen? Or?
The schedule we're working on, again, it is still 100% up to the board. I have to always say that.
Exactly.
But we've the board has approved architect selection.
Oh, okay.
The architects are working, and there's two new buildings and one addition. And to explain, when I say new, the district won't be adding space necessarily. It's replacement, where in the case of Knapp, there'll be a new building built in the green space on Knapp's property.
Okay.
And then the old Knapp will eventually be torn down. In the other one that's going to have a new building is Olympia Brown. And that is actually going to move from where the new school would be built on 5.5 mile road between Charles and Middle Road. There's a land that the district owns.
Okay.
And then the third one, which is an addition, is to put an addition onto Gifford Elementary School.
Oh.
And so each one of those projects are in play. The architects have been engaged. The next step is to get construction managers involved.
Okay.
And that process is so that the architects and the construction managers work together to put together a conceptual plan and a preliminary budget. And when that is done, that's what will be brought to the board, and there'll be discussions with the board. This is what we'd like to do, and this is how much it's going to cost, and then at that time ask for them to take some action on it. We're looking for that to occur near the end of April.
And that was my next question. Do you have any sense for when this might take place?
Yeah, the end of April is what we're looking for.
Okay, so, I mean, our listeners then can live in anticipation, watching, you know, for what the board is going to do in terms of these new buildings relatively soon.
Right, and we're the board has basically two major meetings each month. The one is a study session where no action is taken, but ideas, concepts, future action items are discussed to give the board the background. And then also the business meeting where they do take action, and also here under board development, different things. Every meeting we're going to have something about this process, for the community's sake, but especially for the board. So they know where we're at. There's no surprises. They see where we're coming from, and it really is a community effort. It's these committees, there's many community members on them as well as staff. In each case, the principal is a big part of it, and they're helping guide and develop the plans that will be presented to the board in April.
And I assume in your position that you are the big facilities person, and you have to keep everybody working together. Is that right?
That's my major challenge. Yes,
you're the big coordinator then in connection with that. Well, I wish you well, because it's so important, you know, the outcomes of this in terms of facilities then for our students.
It is, and what it's very rewarding, because it's interesting. Since the passage of the referendum, I see the community in a sense waking up to, you know, wow, we can really do this now. And when you go to these committee meetings and you hear the staff, the community talking about the possibilities, it's creating a new energy, and I think it's great. And I believe that'll be infectious, and it'll help the whole community feel better about the Racine Unified School System and what its future is for the whole community, because I think there's a recognition that the education system of any community is really important, in many cases the heart or the future of how that community is going to do.
I couldn't agree with you more in terms of that. And hopefully then there is this new sense of concern about Racine Unified and what's going on there, because it's the key to the success of our community.
Yeah, and there is such a need for skilled workers.
Yes.
And people that have the new knowledge on technology and how things done and creative thinking. And the community, the business community, people are seeing that. They're experiencing difficulty in filling positions.
Yes.
And so that's obviously a big piece of it as well. It's, you know, we need to get this going, and that will sustain Racine.
Okay, and the automotive program at Park High School speaks well, then, for that aspect, then, of curriculum.
That's a very good example. And earlier when I mentioned the pathways, automotive is an example of that. We've had it for years. And the idea is to expand different pathways where a student can come to our high schools, get an education that will allow them literally to get a job the minute they graduate from high school. For those who may not choose to go on to a four-year degree or even a two-year degree, but that's still an option as well.
Right. So, but all of the options are good options then in terms of their futures as citizens of our community.
The vision for the district is to educate every child to succeed.
Right.
So what that success is up to the individual, but it's the district's job to educate them to realize that.
Right. Okay, you mentioned to me the other day that the science theme is going to be at Old Brown. What brought that about, or so what's that all about?
Well, as the different committees talk, and the Old Brown committee has been contemplating a science theme, part of it is their location. They have that somewhat now where they're located is right on Lake Michigan, and they have access to the outdoors in a sense. The new site is adjacent to or abuts into a wetlands area, and part of the thought process is that we've been talking and do have programs in place for STEM or STEAM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And so that's what they're looking at. When you design a school, it has to have the basics, but there's some things you can do that make it a little bit special, and they're looking at things that they may be able to do at O'Brown.
Okay.
Don't know what those are yet. They're working with the architects.
Right.
You know, when you think of like an outdoor classroom, what could you do to have some space that will be useful obviously not when it's this cold, but in the spring and in the fall, where students may be able to take the education outside and learn about the environment or whatever.
Okay. Any sense for what's going to happen to the current Old Brown site? Will the building be torn down then or not, or do you know that?
The building, one of the reasons and the justification that we have for Old Brown is that the building is very tired, even though it was built earlier than some of our oldest buildings.
Yes.
The construction used during that time period wasn't meant to last or wasn't built to last. So the board has not decided. Administration hasn't brought any recommendations yet. But the building itself, if we were to fix it so that it would have a long life, the deferred maintenance on that building alone is $17 million. To build a new elementary, we're talking between $12 and $15 million. So that's the justification. It's actually less expensive to build a new school in that case. And as part of that, the new school would be technology friendly, safety friendly. It would have many new features that you wouldn't see in an old building and not in the existing O'Brown. So that'll be something that'll be determined what to do. The other just point is that the new location for O'Brown is closer to where the kids are.
Yes.
The existing O'Brown being on the lake, it is a beautiful location, but there aren't a lot of children that are close to the building.
Yes.
Moving it to where we're contemplating putting it, it's closer to where the children are.
So the green people in our community, the environmental-oriented people, then will be more positive about this because it's more convenient to where the kids are.
Right.
Okay, let's talk about Knapp then. Let's move on to Knapp Elementary. Tell us about making Knapp a community school was something you mentioned to me the other day.
Yeah, that's a concept. Knapp is an ideal location for that. It's a very a very family-oriented neighborhood. We drew a circle around Knapp, and within a half mile, there's over 700 elementary children.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's a very dense community. The idea of a community school is to build your school and, in addition, provide space and so the community can bring in programming to make it more than a 9-to-5 operation.
Okay.
Weekends, evenings. Obviously, we have our after-school programs and after-school activities, but beyond that, what else can the community, what does the community need, local community there as well as the broader Racine community? What can we do and who can we partner with in order to bring in programming? Examples of this, the architect that is doing the that building built a school, community school up in, I believe it's La Crosse area. And one of the things that school did was they built space that could be used by medical professionals to bring in medical services, and they're trying to find a partner to do that. And I believe they're trying to partner with the Mayo Clinic up there. Not that we're going to do that necessarily,
no.
But that's an example of you find a partner, you find a need for the community. I guess that's the way to start, the need for the community, and then you find a partner that's willing to bring that service in to the community.
And you'll have the space in the
and
school
we'll have
then
space
to
for
provide
that
service.
As well as the school space when it's not be using for school, the cafeteria, the gym, things like that can be available for the community to use for community programming.
Right, okay, and that's a better use then of resources paid for by the taxpayers.
Right, definitely is. And the other part of it is that with some of the services, it will help the education process because it'll help families.
Right.
And we need the families to be a big part of education. Our teachers do a wonderful job. They do what they can, but it's they only see them so many hours in a week. So that if we can help the family along and get not necessarily the unified doing that, but getting the programming from the community to help, that will make for a better program at the school.
Excellent. Okay, let's talk about Gifford Elementary then. What are the thoughts in terms of the future of Gifford?
Gifford is different. That's going to be an addition.
Okay.
And the idea is to convert Gifford to a K-8. One of the things the district has found and knows is that with our middle schools, it's a very scary time for parents and kids going to middle school.
The transition.
The transition. And the idea is that it shouldn't be that way. Our schools are wonderful. My kids all went to Gifford, then they went to Gilmore, and then they went to Case, and they're all successful, thank goodness. They're all self-sufficient. I don't have to support them.
They're not coming home.
No, they're doing well. But the idea with Gifford is to expand the school. It was, for many people know, but some may not, it was built to be a junior high school back in the day.
Yes.
So it was built for the bigger kids.
Yes.
The idea with Gifford is to add space that's more for the smaller kids,
okay,
but then make it a K-8 campus. And the idea is to make it an integrated campus. It's not, we have Mitchell and we have Gerstead, which are big buildings that have an elementary and a middle school in them.
Yes.
The idea behind Gifford is to integrate it so that there's programming throughout the school that it may be similar to some of your private and parochial models where they have a K-8, something like that.
And MPS is doing a lot
right,
of
right, and it is something K-8. That's out there and has been shown to be successful. And with Gifford, that will be new. As that programming develops, the district will potentially be looking at whether Gerstead or Mitchell could emulate that in some way.
Okay.
But that's down the road. I don't want to push
no.
that. We got to one thing at a time.
One thing at a time, but you got to be thinking about the future too, because that comes very quickly
right.
as well.
Right. And we hear from focus groups and from parent surveys that is something they want to have a comfort level in the middle schools, and that's one way to provide it.
Oh, that's excellent. Okay, so we get a sense then for then what's happening then in terms of our buildings. And talk about public input on the new Old Brown and Knapp Elementary Schools. What's happening there?
Well, I mentioned the committees,
yes.
And they've met almost weekly. And like many committees, you have a core group that's there all the time, and then others come and go. The architects are very good, and they're doing different things at the different buildings where they're trying to bring in more people depending on where they're at in the process. The overall process is called programming. It's basically sitting down and saying, okay, here's what you need. Tell me what you want. Let's mush it all together and come out with what we can afford.
what we can afford.
Right.
And what helps kids learn.
Right, right. And that's the needs and the
yes.
wants part of it. Knapp is a really interesting case. I believe it was last week they had an event, and they had 60 to 90 parents come in
really?
and work with the group on some ideas. They're planning another event, I believe, the first week of March, where the architect will be there, and they'll be talking to the community. So that's kind of the process that they're going to, and the Gifford committee has been meeting. They're talking about what they're going to do, and as they come up with and I have to be very careful here. Nothing's done, but a preliminary idea. They present it. There's staff members on the committees. They bring it back to the rest of the staff and talk about it. And it really is an interesting process. All three of the architects that the district is using have built schools before. They've gone through this before. They have a wealth of knowledge. And they really are helping facilitate. And they know the type of community input that they have to have in order to make this work. And they also are good at saying, yes, it would be great to have a swimming pool at an elementary school, but realistically,
Exactly. So and then in the end, though, the board is going to make the ultimate decision.
Right.
How are the board members involved now? Do they come to these meetings, too?
Some of them do. Some of them do. I think they do... They want to listen and hear. They've been kind of, not all of them. You know, it depends on their schedule.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, for me, I'm double booked many evenings. I joke that I really work second shift now because I so many evening meetings.
Sure.
But the board with their governance policy, they look to administration to provide recommendations. They look to administration to provide them with the reasoning, the budgets, and the input that's been used, and if we're getting the proper input from the community and staff, the result that we present to the board, they will look at seriously and make their decisions.
Right. Okay, good. So people, our listeners are interested in what's happening with these referendum funds. Why don't you give them the website, you know, they can turn to?
That's a good question. I believe it's rusd.org.
And then the referendum? Well,
if you go, there's drop-downs, and if you see the homepage, there's a tag that I believe says referendum, and they just click on that, and that'll bring you to the referendum.
Okay, and all of the things that are happening in connection.
Right, and as I said, there's a lot of going on, but because decisions haven't been made, there's not a lot posted there. But that will start picking up as we go. With the Facility Advisory Committee, the one that's handing the deferred maintenance, when we got together, the first thing to do was to get things in the pipeline for this summer.
Right.
And that's in process. Now we're taking a step back and doing some longer range planning, thinking, what are we going to do for next summer, and looking at, are there other schools that it may make sense to, rather than spend millions fixing them up, would it make more sense to possibly replace those? That's down the road. Those are decisions that will be made. But now that we've got things rolling and we get past this first summer, we can start taking a longer-term view, and more things will be posted as we go forward.
Okay, and of course we have a school board election coming up now in April, and so then I would assume that the candidates for school board are paying attention to what's going on,
I would,
too.
Because certainly hope so.
as citizens, we have a right to ask them questions, in terms of this information.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
At this point, I want to remind our listeners that this is your host, Dwayne Olson, and you're listening to Education Matters on WGTDHD at 91.1 on your radio dial from Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin. Today I'm visiting with David Hazen, Chief Operations Officer for the Racine Unified School District. This program focuses on the district's financial issues, including the recent referendum, and the current and planned outcomes of these resources for the district. Now back to our program. Let's move, we just have a few minutes left, so let's move from the referendum to some of our more recent proposals from Governor Walker's budget in the world of public school finance for Racine Unified in all public school districts in Wisconsin. Specifically, I'm thinking of the $150 per pupil reduction in state funding for the 2015-16 school year that has been proposed. Now, that's just proposed, listeners, but we need to pay attention to that. So with some 20,000 students, this would reduce Unified state funding some $3 million. How would that impact Unified?
There's two ways to look at our funding. One is whether it's state aid.
Yes.
That may or may not impact our total spending that we can spend per student. And then the other is the total spending per student. The $150 you mentioned would reduce the amount that can be spent per student.
Yes.
And that's created a budgetary issue for the district that we have to address. If we have $3 million less next year than we had this year, we have to find $3 million worth of reductions. And the other budget pressure is that there's also inflation that occurs. that always creates budget pressure. So it kind of gets the district from both directions. So over the past number of years, we've managed through these things. We're in relatively good financial shape. But this is a problem, because what are we not going to do, or what are we going to do differently? And we're really looking for the differently things, because we're trying to do more and more for our students. One of the big initiatives is to reduce class size by a student a year for the past 3 years, and we've been able to do that. But this year, it's going to be a challenge, because when you don't have the funding, you have to look at where can you get some savings.
Exactly. And interestingly, Governor Walker's budget would restore that $150 per pupil in the 2016-17 school year. And somehow, this doesn't make sense to me. Take it away 1 year, restore it the next. Do you have any sense for the rationale for this?
Well, and actually, they're going to raise it to $165 the second year.
Oh, so you get a bonus.
Right. And I think it's really the state has budget issues as well.
Ah.
And they only have so much money to go around, and I'm sure you have heard, listeners have heard about, they're looking at making some changes to the secondary education in the UW system, making reductions there. So, you know, I'm not at that level at the state, but that's the reason they're doing it. You know, all of us would like to keep our little portion of the pot whole, and we'll be working towards that. But, you know, we have to live with what we have to live with.
Right. Okay. Well, I guess that helps me understand that just a little bit then, in terms of what's happening here with the K-12 school budget. Another financial challenge facing Racine Unified is voucher students. Students who would receive a state-funded voucher to go to a private or parochial school. How does that affect Unified?
Well, the vouchers have had an impact. We have lost some students that were Racine Unified students. But also, it's hard to get an exact number from the state, but we know from anecdotal information, as well as looking at some of our busing patterns and things like that, that there's at least half of the students that have gone onto the vouchers were never Racine Unified students. In the first place. They were private and parochial that took advantage of the funding mechanism. What some of the proposals are in the governor's budget is to reduce the income level that makes you qualify for vouchers. Right now it's 300% of the poverty level, which for a family of four is roughly $70,000.
So that gets at very middle class people.
Right, and I believe in the proposal it's to go down to 180 or 185%, which brings it down to about $40,000. So I guess the broad picture is fewer families would qualify for the vouchers, and they would target kind of where the voucher movement started, where you have families that can't afford the option of private and parochial, to give them the option. So that's one thing that would happen. I see that as a, in a sense, a positive for Racine Unified. I personally have had no issues with vouchers if they're there to help students get a better education, but I have had issues if it's just a way to pay for education that they can get, you know, in the public schools as well. So this is kind of, in my mind, a move in the right direction to make it target where it was meant to target in the beginning.
Okay, yes, it started out in Milwaukee then with just simply low-income people then having access to vouchers.
Right. And the other change is the amount that the voucher schools would receive.
Yes.
This is a little more complicated, and I hope I get it right, but they're going to take all of the voucher students throughout the state and pool how much money they would have given to their school districts, pool them all together, and then divide it up, and that's what the students would get or the schools would get. Racine Unified, being a higher-aided district, generally would lose more per student, but when you pool it across the state, the voucher schools will probably get less than they are right now in Racine, because you're going to be pooling it with other districts that aren't so highly aided. So, and I believe that's also part of, in the long run, budget constriction by the state. They only have so much money, so they're going to pool it and divide it by the students.
Okay, and that, of course, is creating challenges then for voucher schools.
Yep,
schools
they'll have their budget issues just like we do, yes.
Yeah, and I was interested, my last guest was the new head of the school for Prairie School, and I asked him about vouchers, and they do not take vouchers, so the school themselves then can decide whether they will accept voucher students or not.
Right, right, they are. And then there's some schools that have chosen not to and some schools that have in the private and parochial world.
Okay. Our time is almost up, so there's anything that you would like to discuss in closing or reemphasize in closing for our listeners?
Well, I've been involved in Unified, as I said earlier, 9 years on the board, and now it's a little over 7 years in my current roles.
In your professional role with the district. There you go.
And I've been a lifelong Racine resident. I moved away to Illinois for a couple years because of a job move, but came back. So I consider myself lifelong, went to school here.
Sure.
And really, I've never seen such an exciting time for Racine Public Schools. And it really is the whole community. It includes everything east of I-94. We've got this high school transformation is creating a buzz. The referendum's creating a buzz. We're in some statistics that are coming out just the other day. We have something called freshman cohort, and we're seeing improvement in the number of freshmen who are getting the 6 credits that they need to get for their first year. It's just a really exciting time.
It's an exciting time then in education in Wisconsin, and particularly in public education here in the state.
Yes, in Racine.
Okay. This is a little aside, but I've been trying to remember if there was any public discussion of creating state-funded voucher schools in Racine County, and I know that we have that here in Racine, but was there any discussion of that? I'm a person who pays attention to what goes on in schools,
that happened,
and I don't remember that.
3 years ago, and there were a few meetings that were held. I remember going to most of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it was a very short time frame that those discussions were held.
Okay, so you remember that there were meetings.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Okay, I guess I missed that one entirely.
Yeah. I don't know if everyone was aware until it already had happened.
Right. Okay. To our radio audience, we say thank you for being with us today as we visited with David Hazen, Chief Operations Officer for the Racine Unified School District. This program focused on the district's financial issues, including the Racine referendum and the current and planned outcomes of these resources for the district. All the best to you, David, and your important work with the district. It certainly looks challenging, but it looks exciting.
Yeah, thank you, Duane. I'm re-energized with all of this for sure.
There you go. Finally, tune in next Saturday at 10:30 a.m. for another edition of Education Matters. This is your host, Duane Olson, thanking you for being with us today.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org.
Support comes from Gateway Technical College. Begin your accounting career here and then finish your 4-year degree at UW Parkside. Flexible, affordable, and profitable training for jobs that are waiting. To learn more, visit gtc.edu.
WGTD HD2 plays jazz, big band blues, and more 24/7 on your HD radio, desktop computer, or mobile device. For access options and our new program schedule, visit WGTD.org and click HD2.
Support comes from Vero International Cuisine in downtown Racine, featuring a 5-course steak au poivre dinner with award-winning wines from Storino Tratta, Saturday, February 21st. For reservations, call 262-260-8675. I'm Gregory Berg, and coming up on Monday's morning show here on WGTD, several interviews, including one with operatic tenor Brandon Jovanovich, who is about to star in an opera receiving its premiere performance at the Lyric Opera of Chicago, a Holocaust-based opera called The Passenger. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu.
Community Matters will not be heard as scheduled today, so we can bring you an early opera start. The Metropolitan Opera coming up in 15 minutes on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
The Prelude and Laura's Theme from Dr. Zhivago. The Academy Award was given to this film score in 1965 to composer Maurice Jarre. Composer Ennio Morricone has written music for more than 500 motion pictures and television series, as well as contemporary classical works. In 2007, he received the Academy Honorary Award for his magnificent and multifaceted contributions to